listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
And hello, good morning, everybody. My name is TJ McCormick, filling in once again, lucky you, or unlucky you, or whatever. Don't go anywhere. It's me, TJ, filling in for Alan Cardoza. You are, in fact, listening to Answers for the Family, a weekly show here on LATalkRadio.com, which is produced by and hosted by Alan Cardoza of West Shield. What is actually the name of the company?
West Shield Adolescent Services.
West Shield Adolescent Services. Okay, what is it? And you can find them at transportingteens.com.
Yep. Absolutely.
Transportingteens.com. My co-host, Alan's associate, Rob Spencer, is across the way from me. We were here last week and we gave you fascinating, wonderful radio. So you're welcome a week later. I didn't get any thank you emails, but I'll just assume that it was in your heart.
I got a bunch.
Did you? Oh, good.
No,
well, yeah. I did all the heavy lifting last week. You get all the emails? Good God. So Rob over there and our guest today here in studio, brought in by Alan, are Rob and Pam Nielsen, co-founders and two of the owners of Cedar Ridge Academy, which I brought the website up over here. Cedar Ridge Academy. Go to the homepage here real quick. Just right off your website here, since 1996, Cedar Ridge has been helping teens and see, look at that. This is what I was doing in here. You thought,
yeah,
I was just some guy offering water. No, I'm doing my research in here.
You got the chair now.
You're darn right. Yeah, now I'm comfortable. Now exactly. I'm not cramping because that awful chair. Since 96, Cedar Ridge has been helping teens and families change their lives using the principles that have helped create strong family ties. Cedar Ridge has developed into one of the most respected therapeutic boarding schools in the United States. And welcome to Answers for the Family, Pam and Rob. Hello.
Good morning.
How you doing? Good morning to you. I guess my first question is, let's see, now the two of you own it, as well as I think there's another Nielsen in there.
Yeah, it's our son.
Your son, and what is his name? I'm sorry.
Wes.
Okay, Wes. And yeah, you're definitely going to want to get a little bit more intimate with that mic. So you founded it in 1996. What was the impetus for the founding of Cedar Ridge?
Yeah. Goes back a long time. So you're asking a question.
Yeah.
You're asking a question that I could take a long time to answer.
Okay.
Getting out of the service in the early 70s, I had started, prior to the service, taking karate. I had a really strong, positive feeling about the good it could do.
Mm-hmm.
Got out of the service. I was going to be a physical therapist. Went back to school. Started writing research projects on how karate could really help kids develop, and I had a passion for it. And from that time on, I was looking for a way to develop a sort of a program where I was influencing kids to do better. I've always befriended the shy kid, the one that was kind of shut down, picked on, not the real good athlete in school.
Yeah.
Today we call them nonverbal learning disordered kids. Usually,
used to be the shy kid.
Yeah, the shy kid.
The nonverbal learning disorder.
Nonverbal. Yeah.
It's a complicated friggin' world. Can't we just keep it simple? Go ahead.
Back then we call them adaptive kids.
They didn't quite
fit in.
Uh huh. And I'm sorry. So let me interrupt you. Now, did you find that karate? In other words, was it that you realized karate, martial arts in general, was therapeutic for you? Is that what it dawned on you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And did you find that, you know, was it something that was I'm just going to take a guess. I'm just wondering. I shouldn't even necessarily say I'm guessing or assuming. I'm wondering, were you in the service during Vietnam?
I was.
Okay. And were you in Vietnam?
I was.
Well, first, thank you for your service.
You're very
God
welcome.
Bless you. Thank you. Did you find that? I wonder how profound was martial arts and its therapeutic impact on you in terms of your coping mechanisms, coping skills, while in country and then back home.
I think very profound. Actually, I was in recon, Marine Corps, Navy corpsman.
So you were up front.
Up front.
You were up front and telling guys behind you what the heck was just about missing you. Bullets flying, stuff on the ground, and you were doing reconnaissance.
Reconnaissance. Okay. I actually was teaching karate to those guys in Camp Pendleton. They always asked me to ease up on them because I'm fairly rigorous at the time. Mm-hmm. Certainly, my feeling about it was the better shape you were in, the best chance you had of staying healthy.
Sure.
And so preparedness was really important.
Sure.
Also, philosophically, my instructor, when I started karate at 17, he came over from Japan. He had a lot of nice philosophical viewpoints to put out that really supported personal development.
Right.
So that was the roots. And really the literature back then, if you read anything that was published by some of the well-known teachers in karate, they had a lot of good things to say about what it would do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's Funakoshi Geech, and the ultimate aim in the art of karate was lied not in victory nor defeat, but in the perfection of the character of its participants. So that was strongly taught.
Uh-huh. So. Okay. So basically, you come home from your service in Vietnam, and one of the things that keeps you going mentally, spiritually, emotionally, and physically is martial arts, and you then pursue, I guess, a couple of degrees what are your degrees in? I saw it on your page.
I'm a marriage and family therapist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so you figure I'm gonna apply these principles that got me through living hell and a real tough patch, a rough patch in your life being Vietnam. You figure, you know what, if it worked for that rough patch for me, maybe we can apply it to families in need of some stability, some guidance.
You know, it's much more refined now. From
right,
then.
Sure, sure, sure.
A lot of... well, I think even Rob here, who also teaches karate, martial arts, when you're teaching, people look up to you quite a bit, and they're always asking for advice.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have an obligation to model what you're doing. In fact, I think modeling is in program. That's very important.
Mm-hmm.
So who you are, the relationship you develop, that puts a lot of responsibility on you.
Yeah.
So you continually look out to be better prepared to fill the shoes of that responsibility.
Hmm.
And so I think those things naturally led me on to more sophisticated thinking.
Yeah. Now, I'm sorry. Now, Rob, the other Rob, Rob Spencer, in your daily work with West Shield, along the same lines, you're kind of at the beginning of that conveyor belt that delivers these kids to places like Cedar Ridge. Nobody ever wants me, by the way. Nobody ever calls me. I'm on the air for like 3 minutes. And you know what? No, I don't need you to because everybody else is calling me right now. This is freaking ridiculous. Everybody wants to talk to me when I'm on the air. You at the beginning of this conveyor belt, when you heard about Cedar Ridge, first of all, do you apply principles that you've learned in martial arts to your job? And B, what did you think about when you first heard of Cedar Ridge and any other
places? Well, when I first, I think that Alan pretty much, when I came to West Shield, there's a shift in the industry. Mm-hmm. And the shift was going very quickly from upper middle class to wealthy families, sending their kids to get some help, to government-funded, forced, court-ordered, school district, all government, like, parties involved on shipping these kids off.
Right.
So it was a very different kid that we're coming across in a lot of ways. Hmm. So, like, the traditional transport and the traditional transport agent, I noticed, were were getting ran from. They were getting beat up. They were getting weapons drawn on them. They were getting a lot of horrible things happen, mainly because of meth. Meth ran wild a few years ago amongst all these kids. Mm. Now I think we're moving on to a lot of scripts. Mm. But back then...
Scripts, let me just translate for everybody. Scripts meaning different opiates, different prescribed drugs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hydrocodone, blah, blah, all that stuff. All that good stuff.
So anyways, from there, my whole goal was to come in, develop... get in the field, develop a training on what I see is going on out there, and help these agents get more prepared on a physical and psychological level to deal with the kids that they're coming in contact with. Okay, so I did that. Since then, I found value in it, and I've stayed. But it helps tremendously on the martial arts sake, because what martial arts does for you, along with physically, because you're so confident in a physical level, it helps release a lot of those insecurities you have on a psychological level, and you no longer are kind of acting out accordingly. But by physically being prepared, you can kind of remove the big threats of the situation, and really get to a kid where he is and identify that and help them get to where they need to go in a successful way, not a forced way.
Right.
That's kind of the gig there. Now, when I heard about Pat and Rob, it was I was kind of excited, because it's actually the first, I don't know of any other program that has
I think I basically broke ground when it comes to the karate and programs.
Yeah, I don't know of any other program that offers that. But for years and years and years, I have parents bringing their kids to me in hopes of using a martial art class as a tool to help them kind of break some of the things they're doing, or create some character and some discipline.
Sure, yeah, that discipline is probably the operative word there that a lot of just, you know, lay people think. I know it's when I think of sending a four-year-old to Taekwondo, it's about, you know, discipline.
Right. Hopefully at four, you're not going to have to defend your life.
Yeah, exactly. It's about shutting up, stand in line, do what master says, and there you go. Yeah.
It's a lot about self-confidence, though.
And self-confidence, yeah.
So along with that, I've always had, especially on even a psychological level, meaning doctors, not necessarily doctors like medical physicians, but like a psychiatrist or psychologist or any counselor, that type of thing, or even a lot of, I face it a lot in like religious families and stuff like that, where the idea of teaching a kid violence to rehabilitate is so foreign to them, because they don't understand the concept of the hard work involved and what that does psychologically. Right. So that's like the biggest, when I heard about you guys coming down, I was like, oh, great. I know why I do what I do, and I know what my philosophy behind it, but I'm very interested to see yours and see how they line up.
Well, let me get Pam involved here. She didn't just come for the scenery to just look around this expansive studio. Pam, welcome, first of all.
Thank you.
And so let's just ask you this. First of all, if anybody is in need at all, let me just right off the bat here, if they need to be in touch with or they're curious about Cedar Ridge. Cedar Ridge, traditional spellings of both words, Cedar Ridge, all one word, .net, cedarridge.net, will bring you to their homepage, and you can find all their contact information. I won't give out the telephone.
It's real important that you put only one R in it, though.
That's right. Okay, yeah, Cedar Ridge. So it's Cedar Ridge.
No, it's Cedar Ridge.
Or that. Yeah, Cedar Ridge. See, we could debate that all day. Yes, so it's Cedar Ridge with one R. There you go. Thank you for I didn't see that. I'm getting very old. Cedar Ridge, one R. All the contact information is there. And what is the 800 number for West Shields?
800-899-8585.
There you go. And that's transportingteens.com. Pam, What is the experience like at Cedar Ridge? A teen is brought to you. What is, in a nutshell, the experience from intake to daily life in the program? What's it like there at Cedar Ridge?
Well, new students who come in are assigned to a peer mentor, first mm-hmm. of all, mm-hmm. and a residence. We have five residences. Mm-hmm. We try to have more of a family, home-like experience rather than a dorm. And so that peer mentor helps a student go through an initial learning phase of, we use a boys, what's called the Boys Town model of social skills.
Boys Town. Oh, the old,
Boys Town. There's eight social skills that they have to master, demonstrate. That's some of the core concepts that are the foundation for the behavioral piece of the program. We, when we were going to graduate school at UNLV, both of us at the same time, we worked for the state of Nevada with emotionally disturbed boys, and that's where we learned the family teaching model and the Boys Town model of social skills. Mm-hmm. And Rob's a very creative thinker, so he's done a lot of adapting and mm-hmm. expanding and modifying, but that's a core that they start with. And a couple mm-hmm. of the really important social skills are accepting no, mm-hmm. following instructions, mm-hmm. accepting consequences, mm-hmm. and half a dozen others that are, they're based on a lot of mutual respect. And so we mm-hmm. establish a climate of respect, staff to students, students to staff. Mm-hmm. What Rob said about the role modeling is very big, and so that's why they have the peer mentor, somebody mm-hmm. who's been there longer, shows mm-hmm. them the ropes. Mm-hmm. This is how you
right.
handle yourself mm-hmm. if you want to avoid consequences. And then right. after that short period of getting to know the ropes, so to speak, the student begins getting responses to whatever they choose to do, mm-hmm. whether it's a positive or a negative.
Okay.
And then that feeds into the level system that we have that moves students through phases of the program mm-hmm. to the point where we believe they might be ready to go home.
And now, a child, a teen that's brought to you, mm-hmm. Are they brought to you, sent to you? Are they, for lack of a better term, again, I'm a layperson here, mm-hmm. are they either committed?
No.
Lack of a better term. In other words, are these kids free, quote-unquote, free to walk away at any time, and then but then they have to face consequences of the state of Utah or other place? Or, you know, in other words, are they remanded to you? I guess maybe.
No. Do you want me to answer it or you?
Go ahead.
students primarily arrive with their parents.
Right.
And because we're a therapeutic school, mm-hmm. the technical term would be enrolled.
Okay.
They are enrolled because mm-hmm. we have school and therapy are pretty equal in a therapeutic school, at least in the state of Utah. Mm-hmm. So they're enrolled in the school. Mm-hmm. We refer to them as students.
Okay.
And they have an assigned therapist, mm-hmm. but they also have a regular school day.
Okay.
And a high school education that can get them to college or mm-hmm. credits that go to other high schools if they're younger and they don't finish with us.
Okay. Go ahead.
Sorry. And very few arrive via a transport agent. Mm.
Like Rob.
Uh-huh. Over two-thirds of them have had a wilderness therapeutic experience before they come into the longer-term residential setting, so that means they're pretty settled down. Mm-hmm. Issues have been identified.
You don't necessarily get a raw nerve. I mean, you'll get a kid who is
once in a while.
But in terms of, rarely will you get, once in a while you'll get a kid who... We don't know what the hell this kid's problem is. You know, it's just, here's this, and God.
Or they might be a run risk.
Be a run risk. Okay. And also now, is Cedar Ridge ever given as an option by the law in lieu of, say, juvenile hall or some kind of, in other words, will a judge give a parent the option, say, look, mm-hmm. your kid, I could either send your kid to the whatever, mm-hmm. or if you have the means, you know...
Private treatment in lieu of incarceration and or community service.
Yeah.
We have kids log community service hours with us.
Right.
But it's probably no more than 10% of our student population has court involvement or probation officer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it happens.
There's a criterion for the kids at Cedar Ridge. So there's a screening. We don't just take anybody.
Okay.
You want to make sure that...
You're limited to how many? How many are
we have 70 beds.
Yeah, 70 beds. So go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah.
So you're limited to 70. So you have a process, a vetting process, so to speak, a screening process.
Yeah. You want to make sure that your treatment paradigm has reasonable expectations for success with the kid that comes into the program.
Right.
Another point also is that I believe very strongly in the power of modeling, okay? Mm-hmm. So in our society, there's a lot of modeling that's going on. Kids are watching that and picking up on it, and that's not always
good. Now, you're using modeling. Obviously, you're using modeling in a clinical sense. When you say modeling, are you talking about different things they're exposed to in the media, different things they see at their school on the street corner in the playground? In other words, gang stuff, drug paraphernalia, drug usage.
Yeah, social.
All girls should be skinny.
Yeah. All girls should be skinny and wear practically nothing and look like prostitutes.
That kind of, role modeling on the part of the peer group, media, sometimes parents.
Oy vey. Well, Rob has to usually curtail his. I can say it as the impartial host. Like, parents got a lot of explaining to do. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, the treatment paradigm that we're talking about, social learning theory.
Yeah.
Okay, so that plays very large in
right.
And thinking about treatment, basically, it's very powerful for kids to do what they see other people do. So you want to make sure that the balance, what goes on in your program, has a large part or dominant part of a pretty healthy modeling. And this is that the kids are doing pretty well; they're fairly happy.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't take in kids too fast. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't offsets the balance of that. So you're always looking for that.
Right.
So with that in mind, it's very important who comes in and how many of maybe whatever their issues are you might want to feel like you can handle in the system at any given moment. So that's always being looked at.
Okay. And you're which I think is really interesting, that peer, what do you call it, the peer mentor? Is it peer? That's fascinating. So, it's almost like a dorm supervisor, an RA, somebody. In other words, it's somebody their age who was in their shoes a few months ago or a year or so ago, who's been around, been through the system at Cedar Ridge, and is there as a go between, as a liaison, as a mentor, and is in fact one of them, not just an adult with a clipboard.
Right. One of the developmental tasks of the students as they're getting ready to leave, as they're moving toward resuming a place in a larger society, is to develop peer leadership skills and peer resistance skills. In other words, the ability, and this is where a lot of the martial arts training enters in, and Spencer can comment on this too. That to develop the level of self-confidence and feeling good enough about themselves that they can say no to inappropriate choices.
To walk away from inappropriate, absolutely. And what's that called again? Peer, what was that?
It's a peer leadership skill development. And
right.
Peer resistance.
Peer resistance. That's interesting.
Hey, let me ask you a question. How important is you, and I see a lot of programs and a lot of, I want to say, for lack of a better term, rehabilitation. When it comes to, you know, I don't even like that word so much because it sounds so criminal, but for lack of a better word, I'll use it. How important is it for you guys in your development to teach these kids how to be, first of all, when it comes to kind of getting a kid on the right track, I think first you got to give them to buy into you, which I consider a dependency.
Right.
And then from there, you need to teach them how to be independent.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And unfortunately, that's where a lot of places fail. They teach people how to be independent, and they send them off to the same environment they came from. But the finale of it all needs to be to teach them how to work with their environment, with their group, how to be strong in the middle of mud and chaos, and how to be a leader. Often to attract people more along the lines of bringing them up than them bringing you down.
Without alienating the other people.
Absolutely. Nobody likes this holier-than-thou guy runs around damning everybody to hell because they are evil. When 2 years ago they were doing the same thing, it comes across very hypocritical. And it's very unattractive to people. So it usually sends people in the opposite direction. But when it comes to going away, finding and coming to terms with who you are and who you need to be in character for society, it's very important to learn how to be interdependent, how to be independent and work with family and friends, even maybe even the same ones you've left with. Obviously, you got to cut off the fat, the ones that are really bad. But how important is that for your guys's in your guys's kind of program?
If I was to talk about the most critical developmental task, as I want to put it in that terms, that's the ability for an individual to recognize what's in their own best self-interest and will select influences that support that best influence. So we have a term that we use. I think other programs use it. It's called out for acceptance. And I define that as that you compromise what's in your best self-interest in order to gain friends, a support group. And the biggest problem, for sure, for me, is the non-working friends, okay? And really this isn't a comment about the other people. Mm-hmm. It's really a comment about that, I call them students instead of clients, that young man or woman's ability to hold to them what is best for them and not be influenced by, for whatever reasons, and there's lots of them, to go the way of joining into a crowd or a group for acceptance when that just is taken away from them a good future. And ultimately, in the whole program, one task after another, the development of self-esteem and self-confidence, that's the supreme challenge for the kid when they leave the program. That when they walk out of there, are they going to continue to stay with what's in their best interest? And in order to do that, okay, when kids first come into the program, if you were to challenge them and say, hey, what are you going to do? What are you going to be when you grow up? What are your goals? What excites you? It's really tough getting anything out of these kids. They're not moving in a direction.
Exactly.
They're not moving in a direction where they can hold that into their mind.
At first, right? Yeah, at first, it's like getting water from a stone.
Yeah, they don't know who they are.
Absolutely, let alone an answer to a question that has anything to do with 3 days from now, right? So what I'm wondering is, I guess a kind of an interest. One of the questions that was going through my head that I want to ask you is, how long is the average stay? And in addition to that, usually, and I know there's a million different stories any given day at Cedar Ridge, but how long are the students there? And B, I'm wondering, usually for your average teen with issues, how long does it take before they, I forget how long, because that so varies. Let's ask you this. First, answer the first question. Okay. I'm trying to get better at interviewing here. And I got so many freaking questions, I can't keep up with myself.
Okay.
Average stay.
Average stay. It's going to be somewhere longer than a year. It's going to be 14, 15, maybe 16 months.
Okay.
If you wanted to average it out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Does anybody ever come for like a four-year? Will anybody be there for their high school years?
No, not. Not yet. Never had a student that long.
Haven't had a student that long.
Not
okay.
Yet.
Okay.
We've had kids there for over 2 years.
Over 2 years.
That's quite a long time.
And have you ever had anybody come back and be on staff? Has that ever happened where somebody's returned?
That's happened.
Yeah, several times.
That's happened.
Good question.
Times.
See, I'm good
about
at that.
About four or five, actually.
It's happened several
yeah.
times.
Really? Okay. And
we've been
so,
there for 12 years, so we've got students now who are 30-ish, former students.
And they've gone off, gotten the appropriate degrees. And
married, sent us Christmas cards with the pictures of their kids.
Therein lies, obviously, one of the huge reasons that you do what you do.
Yeah.
I don't even have to ask you what the satisfaction is like. What tells you that – give me an example of a moment where you think or a confluence of events tells you that the light's going on over this kid's head.
Well – let's go back to that idea of what is your plan?
Mm-hmm.
One of the things you're looking for is that to tell you how well they're doing is mm-hmm. that they can look at you and say, this is what I want to do. Mm. I'm excited about some future goal that mm-hmm. has merit.
Right.
Because as soon as they have that in focus, you know, everything about what we do makes complete sense.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that, nothing can make sense. If you don't want it to make sense, if you're going to be resistant,
uh-huh.
you know, the first task of being there is to settle in and then to accept that you're there to work on yourself and hopefully achieve something.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to change, okay, I worked a long time, had a hypnotherapy clinic for a long, long time, and you had desperate people coming in all the time for change, and they were highly motivated. The degree of motivation really is going to have a dramatic effect on how well, mm-hmm. how fast the treatment is and how good the outcome is.
Mm.
And a person will change much more readily based on what they want
right.
versus what they want not to have. Okay, so if they come in and they say, well, I'm doing this, I got to stop doing this, mm-hmm. that's a pretty tough thing to change. So you want to see them motivated at some point. Mm-hmm. And our level system identifies that. And that's, we have it at our level 800. It's a trust mm-hmm. level sort of a mm-hmm. thing. So that we can really, if that's not there, then the prognosis isn't going to be that good. You've got to develop.
Let me back up for 1 second.
Okay.
You said something very, very profound, mm-hmm. and it kind of got ran over, and it's something that you're talking about how an individual can make a difference in their own life and how they can develop for themselves and all this other, which on a surface level sounds very, not in a negative way, but very selfish.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But what you the key to what you just said earlier that changes that selfishness to selflessness is when you talk about creating a goal of merit. Of merit.
Exactly.
Man's desire is to be a part of something greater than themselves. And that goal of merit is exactly what you're talking about. When you talk about the hypnotherapy, you're talking about when somebody wants to quit smoking because it's bad for them, they're not going to quit smoking.
No.
When somebody
exactly.
wants to quit smoking because of a greater cause than themselves,
yeah.
they will quit smoking.
Absolutely. Right. That's one of my screening mechanisms when they come in. I say,
exactly.
Well, why do you want to quit?
Exactly.
Well, because my wife wants me to. Well,
so,
they're not
going to
quit. There you go. I should save your money.
So let's now take that in the direction of your martial arts teaching. See, because I think I said this a little bit last week, but mm-hmm. when it comes to martial arts, people want to take martial arts for very different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Often, reasons that aren't really the reasons. They're just the byproducts of their actions. Mm-hmm. So we need to, as martial arts teachers for one, but in your case, as a treatment psychologist it's about catching them young enough to change their lives, basically,
yeah.
and change the lives of the people around them, which is
that's important,
which is great, you know. So,
yeah.
through your martial arts teaching and stuff, I think it's important that we spend some time on this because most parents have no idea what martial arts really is and what it's
right.
about. It's about what they see on TV and what they see in movies,
yeah.
and
they think it's kia,
and that's rarely what it is.
Yeah.
So I want you to have the platform to kind of explain to the parents or the educational consultants or whoever's listening out there what your philosophy as a martial arts teacher is and the way it works. Now, when we say martial arts, the first word of that still is martial. All right, so it's very clear that we need to understand that this is a physical thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is punching, kicking, stances, structure. Mm-hmm. It's creating discipline and focus through acting out of self-defense. So that, with that being said, that's where most people leave it.
Mm-hmm.
So the common question is, why would you teach somebody that has problems how to hurt somebody else?
That's a wonderful question. That was the question that was posed to me by other professionals when I first said, you know what, I want to teach karate. And we had a conference down in San Diego shortly after, maybe within 6 months of me beginning Cedar Ridge, where I took some students down and they demonstrated what we were doing. And then some of those professionals looked at me and said, you know, I get it. I know what you're doing. I can see it. The question would be, why do you want to teach somebody how to fight who's having a problem with anger, those kind of issues, thinking that that's going to increase that kind of behavior. And another way to explain it, if somebody said, you know what, I'm angry, I want to hit something, kick something, and I said, you know what, I got a kicking bag, I tell you what, let's go kick it. The first few kicks or hits or whatever they're going to do, that's going to be reinforcing of the anger. That felt.
Yeah, those are angry kicks.
Angry kicks. Well, one of the rules would be, you know what, in order for us to do this, you've got to keep kicking the bag as long as I tell you to. Because it won't take long before the anger's gone.
Absolutely.
And then what is it left? Self-control, self-discipline. It's very developmental.
Now, as a martial arts teacher, it's important that you obviously understand this, that physiology involved of feeling a certain way and acting a certain way changes mindset. Absolutely. For example, if you're really angry, try to go into your bathroom where no one can see you because you're going to look like a knucklehead, mm-hmm. and sing happy birthday as loud as you can. Mm-hmm. You can't stay angry and sing happy birthday in the bathroom as loud as you can.
That's very interesting.
It's
yeah.
the same thing.
Smiling. It's the same exercise. People say
exactly.
if
exactly.
you're feeling a certain way, smile. Yeah.
That's not what you're learning.
Exactly.
So it's important. It's important that training is rigorous.
Yes.
In its training. Can't be just stand around and brag about how good you are. That takes it in the other direction. So it's not so much that we were talking earlier and you're talking about some of the things that went on in the 80s and anybody could start a dojo, and there's a lot of people with some pretty big egos out there to
yes.
get up there and attract other people with big egos, and that's really counter to the whole process. It's where you put your ego aside and you train. When I was younger, I thought that was probably the world of karate because that's all I saw. This was in the late 60s, early 70s. And then I started experiencing some schools where kids were out getting in trouble. And I thought, what the heck? Why are they doing that? And then I started to realize what it was. What were some of the essential elements that made the difference? What I knew is that I had parents bringing kids to me all the time saying, hey, my kid's causing me a little bit of trouble. Would you teach him karate? I think it might be good for him. And yeah, kind of counterintuitive that it might be, but it is. And they say, well, he's doing so much better not picking on his sister any longer, you know, doing a good job. And then other kids coming in as well that were in other sports in high school, and they would say, oh, my kid wrestles a lot
yep.
better reflexes, better balance, or basketball, or whatever.
I tell people that all the time. Mm-hmm. And the deal is this. When you learn basketball, you learn how to play basketball. When you learn football, you learn how to play football. When you learn martial arts, you learn how to use your own body and mind.
Center.
So yeah. it applies to everything.
Yep.
One of the other things you're touching on earlier is the fact that when it comes to parents bringing their kids to you, in the outside world of Cedar right. Ridge, in a dojo setting, they say, my kid is having some trouble, can you teach him some discipline, all this other stuff. Through that training, they learn that, okay? Everything is better. But what I think is important to identify is what you represent to the kid. Now, a lot of industry successful, like success coaching and all that other stuff, they call it the law of buy-in. And in fact, John C. Maxwell, I think, quoted the law of buy-in. I think it's his kind of term. But what it means is when people buy into you. So it's a very attractive thing to kids when they look at a martial arts guy who can do phenomenal things with their body and idolize that. So what happened in the 80s is there is no character behind that idolization. So basically, people bought into it, learned how to have that power of influence, and then used it for their own selfish action, you know, to achieve what they want to achieve. What people like you do is you take that law of buy-in and you take it to have a kid to buy into you, and then you model the lifestyle that should be led with that type of ability and character.
You know, the example you set, as a therapist, because of that reason, you're always self-examining what you do. And that's good because, you know, you're hoping very much not to be hypocritical in anything you
right.
say or teach. Or do. So that's that responsibility helps you grow as well. One of the things we're talking about now is a relationship, and in therapy, when they crunch all the factors again and again, the thing that keeps coming out on top is the relationship. And initially, when I thought, I karate had a couple of really obvious benefits that I don't think anybody would want to argue with. One is it's a good physical exercise, a lot of stretching, very helpful. It's done in an atmosphere that's fairly disciplined. It tends toward a kind of a spiritual feeling in the class, and the respect and all the whole way people conduct themselves. That's something unique from a lot of sports and things that people do. And the fact that I had taught it for a long, long time and I was pretty successful teaching it, I was looking for as a therapist. I said, you know what, if those guys can look up to me for what I could teach them in karate, then they would respect what I'd have to say to them.
Do you know how many kids that I come in contact with that will just cuss out, whether it be in front of or to me, their therapist? So to have somebody that, because a lot of them do what I say, not what I do type thing.
Yeah.
But to have a guy that you can see do what he says, that's so valuable. So valuable to kids and so valuable to leadership, to being a role model. I think what a lot of the parents are through now is, look, 80s, early 90s, status quo. Who can get the black belt the fastest in martial arts and in what? And in life, it's who can have the biggest car and the nicest house. And all this. But now all we've done is we've stopped and we're older now and we realize, okay, we're broke financially. We're broken as a family. What's valuable is relationships. What's valuable now is substance. Things that people can take part in and feel good about and be a part of that is bigger than something financial, because obviously that stuff doesn't work, because we just come through a period in society where all the focus was on that, and now we're worse off than we were when that period started.
We are.
So yeah. if nothing else, I want people to kind of look into what you do at Cedar Ridge, because the character and the value behind the martial arts development, the value behind the training, the value behind preparing a kid to be a better person and then sending him off to be a better person in the world around him versus just being fixed, quote unquote. It's something that not everybody can offer. Something that not everybody can offer. So what I want you to do is just kind of, if you don't mind, just spend, we got a few more minutes here, but I want you to spend some time.
Yeah, we have about
time.
Six.
I want you to kind of spend some time here, maybe wrap it up if we need to.
Okay.
Just kind of expressing to the parents, kind of explaining to the parents or to the educational consultants or whoever's out there kind of wondering what the difference is between a martial arts-based rehabilitation, like I said, for lack of a better term.
Therapeutic environment.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Therapeutic environment or a non-martial arts therapeutic environment. Let me say this real quick. Whether the violence thing, if somebody has made up their mind that they want to hurt you, they're going to hurt you. I don't care if they're 12. I don't care if they're 30. I don't care if they know something. I don't care if they know nothing. From the dawn of man, we've learned to hurt. So that's not something that we need to teach. If I need to drive over somebody in my car because I'm 16 and I feel frustrated with peers, or if I need to get a hold of a gun, or if I need to physically hit somebody with a stick or a rock, or hurting somebody is easy. Healing somebody is difficult. Helping somebody is difficult. Martial arts is about teaching people to heal and to help. So how does that play into what you're doing in your therapeutic environment versus not?
Good question. Cedar Ridge actually caters to a lot of kids that are somewhat depressed and anxious, and a lot of ADD stuff going on, ADHD. If it was any cardiovascular exercise in the morning, that would help. That would help that. There's some things that are unique to karate that I didn't even know this when I first started teaching it and having it in my program. It was subsequent to the program that I would be off to a conference someplace, and some lead speaker, some neurologist, would start to talk about the benefits of karate. And it was something to do with the cerebellum, the part of the brain behind you, the CPU of the brain, and that if you would work out in karate, yep, the ADD would it's as if you took a medication that morning for that. And we started analyzing that, and something to do with visual spatial things that go on in karate, that in movement. And it's the kata. Kata would be a really good example of that. And I have what I call shifting patterns. And so there's a developmental process in the brain. And then we know some other things too. Since I started doing this with Cedar Ridge, we know that if you work out in a sustained way for an hour and a half or so, neurogenesis can happen.
Absolutely.
It triggers the production of brain cells. Or if it's novelty. And of course, we have both there, novelty and a rigorous exercise, and then enrichment. And enrichment's a relationship. So you're putting all those components together, and you have this added benefit in the whole discipline beyond simply all the things that we know about it. It would have been we wouldn't have to go that much farther to see it as a real positive tool. And a lot of programs lack that kind of discipline. When I started, there wasn't very many. Some of the weak areas of treatment was exercise.
Yeah, that's been cut out of public schools all day. And the focus is off of that. So yeah, when it comes to public schools making decisions, they value what they are doing in a lot of ways. So that's not a valuable tool. But in reality, it's 100% the opposite. There's so many great things that happen from that. So you got literally like a minute left. Okay. I just kind of want you to close out, wrap it up real quick, and then TJ will close us out here.
You bet. Well, there's nothing that I can succinctly say that would encompass everything. There's so much more left unsaid. My motivation for karate would be that if I had to take my skills as a therapist with a kid and go, you know what, we're just going to do karate, or my skills as a therapist and say, I'm just going to sit down and we're going to do this talk therapy, I would take the karate. The intangibles that go on, the indirect ways that you can reach kids,
yep,
the motivation that goes on with that would be way more powerful than simply sitting down in an hour.
More powerful.
Whatever, and trying to influence the kid to move along. So that's how I'd like to leave it.
There you go.
Wow. Well, that was fascinating. You know, there's actually a million other questions that I had.
Yeah,
it's frustrating the constraints of time. I guess, well, first of all, if anybody within the sound of our voice is in need of the services of Cedar Ridge Academy, you are I would recommend going to everything you need to know, including all of the important contact information. There's email, there's telephone numbers, there's fax number there. Is you go to cedarridge.net with one R. So it's the traditional spelling minus an R. And it's Cedar Ridge with no K. No, that's right. Okay. It's Cedar Ridge,
Q.
One R. Yeah, no Q. Cedar Ridge Academy, cedarridge.net, one R. cedarridge.net with one R. And also the 800 number once again for West Shield.
800-899-8585.
And that will put you in touch with Alan Cardoza, the host and normally host and the producer of this show and the owner of West Shield. And that will also put you in touch with Rob Spencer and all of his services, transportingteens.com. Rob and Pam, a pleasure. And I'm grateful. Did you guys come in like from Utah for this?
Did. We drove. We
did
should
you
not
drive
have
in
yesterday.
For this?
Yeah.
Yes.
For this?
Yes.
For this 1 hour?
Mm-hmm.
You know it.
You know what? You made a long effing drive. I know it's not my show. I may drop the F-bomb on my show.
With all the Christmas traffic from Vegas to here, it's probably more similar to what you were just describing.
Yeah. Well, you know what? My show goes on the air in about 9 minutes, which has made it convenient for me to sit in Alan's absence. Why don't we break for a little bit. We'll get you some. We'll get even more water in you. I don't know why I'm throwing water at people.
We are so hydrated right now.
You guys like thoroughly hydrated. Why don't you stick around and you can hang out and come on my show a little bit. Let's make this trip a little bit more worth your while, and sure. And because it's a valuable resource, Cedar Ridge, and we can speak even more freely on my show. Rob can take his gloves off and tell you exactly how he feels about parents and the government. You can comment politically on my show. God knows that's the whole thing. All right, gang. So listen, my name is TJ McCormick. I've been joined by Rob Spencer. I've been joined here also by Rob and Pam Nielsen of Cedar Ridge Academy. You find them cedarridge.net, 1R. And stick around for my show in about 5-6 minutes, gang. We're going to take a little break, sort of regroup, change a couple of the things here, and we shall return with our same guests. We're going to carry them over to my show because they drove all the way from friggin' Utah for 50 minutes. No way. Not on my watch. No, we'll stick you guys around. It's my station today. You know, the owner's out of town, so I run the joint. All right, so we're going to take off our pants, and we'll be right back here. Answers for the family. Alan's loving that. Once again, you've been listening to Answers for the Family, and you can go to latalkradio.com, go over to the Answers for the Family page. You can listen to archives of other shows that Alan has produced for you. And also keep in mind that, where is it right here? Next week, Alan will have on his guest on January 5th, Hank Hamilton, hypnotherapist. He's going to make Alan bark like a dog and cluck like a chicken at the exact same time. All right, gang, we will see you next week. My name is TJ, filling in for Alan, and have a wonderful, great, happy new year. All the very best to you.
Listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Wait. There's something about the way you try to look. It's getting right to me, deeper than it really should. What are you, an angel, or just looking that good? When you take your time, you are so divine. I'm not surprised, I'd like to watch you in this light.
Once again, everybody, stick around. It's me, TJ. I'm going to be right back in just a few minutes with my show, so don't go anywhere. LATalkRadio.com.